The summary. So we take the Grihastha as another step toward going back to Godhead, because the Brahmachari is basically the student. And when we're young, when we're 10, 12, 15, 18, we're not ready for marriage. We may be a sannyasi type person, or we may be a grihastha type person, but everybody goes, all men at least, go through this brahmachari training, if they're brought up in a devotee family. Of course, preaching in Krishna consciousness in the West, you know, we make people devotees. So they come when they're 20, they come when they're 15, they come when they're 30, or even 40 and 50. There's no restriction. So they didn't have that training. So maybe they already come as a householder. So in any condition, one can take up Krishna consciousness. So I'll finish what Prabhupada said here. That the marriage ceremony is meant to regulate the human mind so that it may become peaceful for spiritual advancement. Regulate the human mind. And we do that by regulating our senses. So we talk a lot about regulation in Krishna conscious married life, that there are some rules. It's not that a devotee marriage and a non-devotee marriage are the same. Non-devotee marriage, there's no rules. It's like, you know, the only rule in non-devotee marriage generally is fidelity. You don't go outside of the marriage. That's not allowed. People will not put up with that. But inside the marriage, there's no regulations. But in Krishna consciousness, we do have regulations, even within marriage, to help us control our mind and our senses. And we did touch on this at one of the days. And we actually have an authoritative book that I wanted to show you that I didn't have the other day. Now, Chandramali Swami gave me this book yesterday. Now, this is called The Third Partner, and it's published by... who's it published by, Ram? Bhakti Vriksha Training Center. From the Jayabhataka Swami's devotees, they do this. Bhakti Vriksha means, you know, congregational preaching. So they made a handbook for grihasthas. Third partner means... First partner is, husband, wife, and Krishna. One, two, three. So third partner is Krishna. Husband and wife are one and two. The third person in the marriage is God, is Krishna. So they talk about many things. This is a very good book that actually should be translated for your country and available for all of the devotees. And if anybody does publishing, you raise your hand, I'll leave you this copy. You can print it. You're involved in some publishing? Some translating, some publishing? Because it would be really good if they could do this pamphlet. Okay, because we'll leave you this copy.
No, I can't leave that copy. Okay. That's the only copy we have.
Well, we can get it. Anyway, we will get a copy somehow or other. This book exists and it can be copied. Maybe not this exact book, but
we can, copy and then I could mail it back to them.
Okay.
I could just show it to him and use that to write. Use that to write away.
Because that was the only copy, and Chandramali gave to me, because he knew I could use it.
Right. So, marriage means children. That is the purpose to... I mean, we have attraction for each other, obviously. Attraction for boys and girls is natural. And with that attraction, we decide... after we're mature enough to get married. And the purpose of getting married is to raise a family, a Krishna conscious family. Not just to, that is the purpose. So in Krishna consciousness, we have regulations for raising family. And one of them was for the conception of children. They recommend that the devotees, it's called Garbhadan Sanskara, or purificatory process to raise, to conceive a child. And in Krishna consciousness, I'll read this here, so it's a direct quote. After getting the blessings of the spiritual master or spiritual guide and parents, the couple should chant ideally 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It says here ideally, it doesn't say absolutely, must be, nothing less. It gives, you know, 50 rounds is a suggestion that's been in ISKCON since I can remember. So, best you can do that, but it doesn't say if you chant 49 rounds, your child's going to be a demon. It recommends around 50 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra before they try to conceive. Thus, remembering Krishna creates a proper environment to attract a good soul to enter their union. Srimad Bhagavatam also testifies to this. And they give a quote here, that the Vedic literatures are not only full of spiritual injunctions, but are also instructive in how to prosecute material existence very nicely with the ultimate aim of spiritual perfection. And this sums up what is marriage. Because marriage is very material, we add spiritual to it, but otherwise it's strictly two living beings getting together to procreate and have children, which is, you can live without it for going back to Godhead. So we want to spiritualize this activity, and this is what the scriptures talk about. It says here, how to prosecute material existence very nicely with the ultimate aim of spiritual perfection. So the aim is spiritual perfection. This is what we're all striving for, whether you're, renounced or a family person. So there's a story here. Devahuti asks her husband, therefore, this is all a quote from the Bhagavatam. Devahuti asks her husband how to prepare herself for sex life according to Vedic instructions. Sex life is especially meant for having good children. That is the purpose of sex. Sex life is not just for our own personal pleasure. It happens to be pleasurable, but the purpose of it is to produce children. So the circumstances for creating good children are mentioned in the Kama Shastra, the scripture in which suitable arrangements are prescribed for factual glorious sex life. I'm not sure what scriptures those are, but it mentions it here, Kama Shastra. Everything needed is mentioned in the scriptures. What sort of house, and this is still the purport, what sort of house and decorations there should be, what sort of dress the wife should have on, how she should be decorated with ornaments, perfumes, and other attractive features. With these requisites fulfilled, her beauty will attract her husband and create a favorable mental situation. The mental situation at the time of sex life may be transferred into the womb of the wife, and good children can come out of that pregnancy. Now this is Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 23rd chapter, verse 11, purport. So that's an important point, that the mental situation at the time of conception may be transferred into the womb of the wife, and good children can come out of that pregnancy. So that's why we chant the 50 rounds. That's why we do some austerities to try to attract a nice soul to our family, somebody who wants to be Krishna conscious. So the parents should try to have that some kind of Krishna conscious thoughts upon conception. So that, we wanted to, fully understand that. If anyone has any questions during my presentation, please just raise your hand. I have no problem stopping and asking for questions, because you'll forget the question as the subjects move on. So if that's all clear, we'll keep reading here what else they talk about. All right. So now we get to the sticky subject. We promised you sticky subjects yesterday, and the Swami came in. We can't talk about sticky subjects in front of the Swami. So, okay, we're over here now.
We come back.
All right, Prabhu. Sticky subjects are... Well, sex is a sticky subject. And I was told after we first talked about this 2 days ago, the whole camp was talking about it. Many people came and said, Prabhu, everyone is talking about your seminar. And we had actually many people talk to my wife in confidence about their lives and all these things. She says, people told us, nobody ever talks about this. You know, we're glad you did. So we're, you know, trying to air out a sticky subject. Maybe it'll get a little less sticky. So here, this is right from the book, so it's not my idea. Nobody can blame me that Anutuba came to Croatia and started propagating everybody have sex. That's not the idea here. We're trying to make happy families and keep people regulated and attain spiritual consciousness. So the author of this book, this is not the purport anymore, the author of this book writes, what happens when the couple have completed their family and don't want children anymore? So, you know, the idea is sex for the conception of children. So you have one or two or three children, and you decide that's enough. So, what do we do? You know, you're married 5, 6, 7 years, you've got 30 years ahead of you. You know, what's the deal? So do they have to stop having physical relations? Srila Prabhupada, there's a quote here from Srila Prabhupada. Affection is an important ingredient in any family. This is an important point. Affection is an important ingredient in every family. And this was one of the subjects I wanted to talk about yesterday. That not only are we talking about just, you know, sex is one thing, but affection. And affection can be manifested in many ways. For example, holding hands, hugging, or kissing, you know, in a light way. And also doing this with your children. Hugging your children, kissing your children, and, you know, generally being physical, you know, emotional, physical with your children, loving with your children. These are not maya. This is natural. And Prabhupada's talking, he says right here, affection is an important ingredient in any family. So I've known amongst the devotee community, some people would not even hold their child's hand because they said it's maya. We have a lot of, you know, there's two scales. You know, you've got the fanatic people, and you got either too loose or too strict. So we're trying to get somewhere in the middle here, so we don't go crazy. So Prabhupada says, you can show your affection with embraces, Prabhupada's saying, embraces, kisses, service, and sweet words. Service, of course, for the men means wash the dishes, pick up the clothes, cut the vegetables, help around the house. And sweet words, of course, the man should try to speak sweetly to his wife and not just, you know, I'm your Prabhu, and Prabhupada said, and you serve me or get out. You know, you have to be a little diplomatic, men. Our nature is to be rough. Men by nature are bears or tigers or lions or something like that. But so when you're married, you have to put away that big brahmachari bee. We got a big bee. When we're brahmacharis, we walk around a big bee on our chest. Brahmachari. So when you get married, you gotta rip that off and put an A. Yeah, I'm an adhikari. I'm nice. I'm gentle. I'm sweet. I'm lovable. So this is how we have to develop. Women appreciate nice things. I wasn't very good at it, but my son-in-law is very good at being very...
Loving.
Loving.
He is good.
Loving. The word has come, loving.
uh, Yeah, my husband.
Go ahead. Take the floor.
It took a couple years to get trained. But I was naturally, and I guess, and I said to my husband, you know, we were talking this morning, and I was saying, I think the second generation has a better chance at marriage than we did because we come with so many misconceptions. But I've noticed with the second generation in our area, all the married couples, the husbands are very loving towards their wives. You know, I can speak for my son-in-law. I noticed that he writes my daughter poems. You know, he still does that. He brings her flowers. She's had a hard day, and you know, he'll call her from work and say, "How was your day?" "So I had a hard day today." And he'll bring her flowers, just because he wants to. You know, he helps around the house, he does the dishes, he cooks. And they're very loving towards each other. And I see that amongst our second generation that are married, they have this loving attitude toward each other. I think because we, the first generation, we had so many misconceptions, it was harder for our men. But he finally got trained.
Took me years.
I trained him.
It took me years to take that fee off.
Yeah, I trained him.
Give us a recipe.
That's right. So now he's trained. I told him, I said, "This is what I want too." I said, "Look at Gauravani. I said, "Look how loving, you know, he is towards Linda." I said, "I want that too." I said, "You can bring me flowers sometimes. Why does it have to
birthday or
right, exactly.
You know, we're thinking flowers are only for God, flowers are only for the deities, you know. Homes are only for Krishna, you know. All this is only for Krishna, you know. We all love, nobody will say here that I don't love Krishna or I don't want to love Krishna. We all want to do everything to love Krishna. But we should also try to, we see our partner as also an object of affection and love. Because they are part of Krishna, because they are Krishna's devotee. And not that our wife's a demon or our husband's a demon. Hopefully not. So we also can serve them because we talk about serve the Vaishnavas, Prabhu. Isn't your wife a Vaishnava? Isn't your husband a Vaishnava? You know, serve devotees. Aren't they devotees? So we can also start at home. You know, devotional service starts at home. So just to finish off this quote from Prabhupada, we talked about you can show your affection with embraces, kisses, service, sweet words. The only thing you should avoid is sex life because it is not an essential mood or essential method of showing affection to anyone. It is an effort to gratify one's own senses. So Prabhupada's obviously not recommending unnecessary sex. But he's saying you can be affectionate in other ways, which often we neglect. So we talk. So we'll go on with what they quote, what suggestions they give here. To achieve this level of love and intimacy without having to indulge in sex takes time for many devotees. So you know the young people get married. We just had the wedding 2 days ago. Do we expect them to be totally on the topmost platform the first week on the honeymoon? You know, they're on the honeymoon, and the wife says, "Prabhu." Lock the door. You sleep over there. Not going to happen, probably. So it takes time for many devotees. We can start with some regulations like avoiding having sex during Ekadasi days and restricting the number of times in a month from 4 to 3 to 2 and then 1 and gradually to making it even more seldom. So this is the recommendation in this handbook for householders. So this wasn't just Anuttama's idea, but this is printed information. And we talked about this the other day. So, and we did hear from a lot of people that said, "I didn't know that. you know, my husband's ready to get a divorce, and I didn't know I can do anything about it. I thought, you know, this is absolute. This is, you know, the guru's word, and if I don't do this, I'm hurting the guru, and I'm not going back to Godhead, and, you know, so many things. So there is a middle road here, and this is what we want to try to get across to you. That the highest platform is intimacy only for the conception of children. That we do not deny, and Prabhupada says it in his books. No contraception, and that we will never compromise with.
That's one thing we don't. We have submission. We don't compromise.
We don't say, you know, you can use contraception and, you know, gradually come to the point of no contraception. We never say that.
We always say
no contraception. The Catholics can do it. We can do it. You know, whether they do it, that's up to them. But many do. The Pope says it also. We also say it. And he has never compromised, even though, you know, modern age would like him to. Yeah, you have a question.
What's to do then when you don't want children anymore? When you don't want children anymore, like you have already have 2-3 children and you don't want them. What to do then?
But how do, yeah, you want, you're having intimate relation, but yeah, sure. That they don't talk about in this book. That's a loaded question.
But we say no contraception and we go by that, but this you, and this is a class of woman that we do separately. There's cycles, women can check their cycles and know which cycles.
Well, the rhythm method is done by the Catholics. That I didn't say. That's them. I mean, obviously, you know, the possibility of getting pregnant is always there without contraception. And that's why many Catholics...
You know, we try to work to come to the highest standard. That's our goal.
That's why many Catholic families have big families. Not that they wanted it, it just happened that way.
And we always pray to Krishna to please help us come achieve this high standard.
Well, that is one reason to also regulate your intimacy, because, you know, unless you want a big family, you know, it may happen. So then, it says here, next paragraph, simultaneously, the couple should engage in good devotee association, good sadhana, and good devotional service, especially preaching and taking care of people. This will give them a higher taste. Now, that's what we hear all the time in Bhagavatam class. Param drishtvanu vartate. By getting that higher taste, we lose all the taste for the pleasures of this world. And that is why the sannyasis can be sannyasis, because they're getting the pleasure from Krishna. They're getting love from Krishna. And they don't need this, affection from a spouse. Although, of course, we've seen many sannyasis who have gotten married. And that is because it's not easy to get love of Krishna. And we do hope, and for those of us who are already married, you know, what is the, you know, the possibilities are even, you know, it's also there. But we need to have that, if we need to satisfy our material emotions and also our spiritual emotions. And by understanding these methods, one can have both. And that's the idea. So it says here, this will give them a higher taste on the spiritual platform, and they can experience more intense love for each other, which does not need sex or the actual act of procreation to express it. So the word love, sometimes we, and I've heard this in many classes, and so have you, prema. We say prema. In the Sanskrit, love is prema. And how many people have heard in Bhagavatam class that love is only for Krishna? I personally have. Anybody else ever hear that? Love is only for God. Yeah, a lot of us. It's, you know. Here it says, you know, that we can also have love of our children, of our spouse. It's not exactly the same as Krishna prema, because it's temporary. You know, life in this world is temporary. nobody thinks I'm going to be with this, you know, with my wife forever. I'm, you know, I'm going to die. So ultimately, Krishna Prema is what's eternal. But in Krishna Loka, you'll notice there are Krishna expanded himself into the living beings to experience a relationship, a rasa. This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. The God was one, and he wanted to experience exchanges. So he became many. And we are the many. We are like they described as Krishna's has the complete qualities of Godhead, and we have them in minute quantity. Satchitananda. So when we talk about marriage, we talk about actually two incompletes trying to become complete. And that's why in a materialistic marriage, it's never complete, because without adding Krishna, it can't be complete. And this is what we do in Krishna consciousness. The Mayavadis, their whole way of obtaining liberation is to renounce the world. Basically, to be a good Mayavadi, you have to be a sannyasi. They don't really, the Grihasthas, there's no senior people who are married people in the Mayavadi group. Because they have to be convinced that this world is false, and that there's no pleasure here, and only the pleasure is from the Brahman. And Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even Grihasthas can realize Krishna consciousness by taking the process up of chanting, you know, 9 processes of bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam. This is our secret weapon to conquer over lust, greed, anger. We saw the play last night, lust and greed and anger. So these are our enemies. But we try to work, you know, we try to rise above them by adding Krishna in our life. So they conclude by saying, so the devotees must gradually strive for this, which will make them more happy and satisfied. The word there, secret word, is gradually. Not that on the wedding night you are bingo, you know, you're not there. But you gradually rise to this, or strive for this. Even if they are at the lower stage, they should not reject the idea. Even if you're just, you know, coming to the temple, you should at least have some idea that I should try to regulate my life and control my senses. They may not be able to be ideal yet, but they must hope to reach it. In this way, by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, they can keep, they can be making progress. There is no need to feel disheartened or disillusioned about being at a lower stage of spiritual development. Now, this is important. You know, no need to feel bad about yourself. You know, we've heard from many people that, you know, if I, you know, do this with my husband, you know, I'm going to be killing my guru and I'm going to be going to hell. That's not the right idea. He says, we're on a lower level. Understand it's a lower level, but don't feel disheartened or disillusioned about being at the lower stage of spiritual development. Understand, you know, we're working on it. We're all in this together. We're all trying to attain Krishna consciousness. We have a tendency in our movement, and I've seen this all over the world. It is called holier than thou. It is a mood. Maybe you don't know. Holier than thou means that I am holy. I am holier than you. You come to your friend, you tell them some problem, and all of a sudden they're blabbing it all over the neighborhood. They're judging you. That's why householders don't talk about this, because they're worried about, oh my God, they're going to find out that we're fallen, that we're not perfect. So we should not be thinking we are better than our other devotees, that we are all struggling. No one is perfect. The only one perfect is the pure devotee, someone who has attained pure 100% Krishna consciousness. We should be forgiving and understanding to each other. Not that we are, oh, fallen devotee. You know, man. So we should be, you know, forgiving and understanding to each other. And this is what makes a nice community. When we understand each other, we help each other to make further progress. Not that we're all judging each other at every moment, and we're all feeling uncomfortable and in anxiety. So when Krishna is a partner, he is always helpful. He keeps increasing the bliss and happiness of the devotees and makes it easier for them to surrender to him. There is also a connection between the love of the devotees feel for Krishna and what they feel for each other. That's an important point also. We naturally feel, Prabhupada said that the family members, did you say something? No. Oh, you're, okay. It is a natural feeling to have attachment and emotions for our family members, for our children, for our wife, for our husband. Prabhupada said these are natural. You know, we're not trying to cut off feelings and emotions. So we feel love for Krishna, and we also understand that we feel love for each other. So when they begin to love Krishna more selflessly, they can feel the love for each other also becoming more true and lasting. So this is their point. When we love Krishna, we also love each other. Because we see each other as parts and parcels of Krishna. And that's our higher understanding. That's the difference between us and non-devotees. We love each other because we're all parts of Krishna. We love our children because we want to make them, you know, devotees of Krishna. You know, we all make that effort to try to give them Krishna consciousness, teach them stories of Krishna. So we also have to try to help our spouse in that same way. So that this was the sticky subject that we've hoped we've wiped off the stickiness and made it a little bit more touchable. So question, we have a question.
Once Srila Prabhupada was sick and his hand was very skinny, and he showed to Japataka Maharaj, it was only bone and skin. He said, look, only bone and skin. You know why? Because I accept so many not qualified
disciples.
Now, my question is, if he's initiation disciples, is it really not some make problem to Guru?
I mean, this is, as for the householders?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all problems to the Guru. Who's pure devotee? The brahmachari is a problem, the guru. The householders are a problem, the guru. We're all a problem, the guru. You know, we should all become pure devotees, and then we won't be a problem, the guru. Until that stage. You know. So try your best not to be a problem to the guru. But don't be a problem to your wife or your husband because of that. That's the point. So you're pleasing your guru, but your wife is divorcing you. So what, and then he won't be happy with that. Guru, you get divorced, guru's not happy either.
Well, guru is merciful, he will always forget, but wife not.
Exactly. Believe me, the forgiveness of the guru is much easier to attain than the mercy of the wife. I gave this talk in South America once, and I said, I was by myself, my wife is not with me. He said, but I would never do anything to go out of my vows, because I know if I go when I go home, my wife would kill me. This is what keeps a man in check. The rolling pin for the japatis, it has two purposes. So that is a natural checking for the men. How big the rolling pin is. So any more thoughts and comments? Because I think that becomes the most interesting when people interact. Yeah.
Expect that from a devotee to be on highest level if he wants to be initiated?
Is it expected to be on the highest level for a devotee if he wants to be initiated? Prabhupada summed up what he requested of his of potential devotees or potential disciples. Four regulative principles. You know, vegetarian, no intoxication, including coffee and tea. He even mentioned Coca-Cola once. We try not to drink caffeine soda. But he did mention specifically Coca-Cola. And 7-Up too, I think. No, not 7-Up. He said Coca-Cola, Pepsi. He said Pepsi and Coke in Mauritius. He gave a talk. He said, no Pepsi, no Coke. So, but he did drink 7-Up. That was, because 7-Up had no caffeine. Prabhupada liked 7-Up. He would call it 7 o'clock. You have some 7 o'clock? Sometimes he would say that. So no gambling. Don't play the lottery. Gambling's not a big problem for most devotees. And no illicit sex. And throughout our books, Prabhupada again, you know, says no illicit sex. That means not outside the marriage and only within the marriage. And then there are, you know, various, you know, deeper steps that we all know about. You know, conception, procreation only for children, and all of these other regulations. So those are the steps we're working on. And you gradually, which we just read in the book. But to get initiated, the basis is no sex outside of the marriage. And that's what Prabhupada asked. So, yeah.
Sometimes two devotees meet and they are about to have a relationship and enter to Girikastha Ashram, and they indulge in sexual activities, thinking that they will be together
before
marriage.
Not acceptable.
Well, a lot of things happen. This is the world. But that's why we're trying, you know, and that may happen too, but that's not a standard. But within marriage, the main point that we're bringing up is within marriage, the couple should not feel guilty about their private lives. They should work together to gradually come to that best standard, but not that they, you know, not that the best standard is the immediate standard. But you know, if you meet a Brahmacharini here at camp and you're, you know, going out in the moonlight, walking, you know, and holding hands, and you know, that's not to be done. So, any another thought? Yeah.
Once I asked one spiritual master, I won't mention the name, but I asked him, is it the same to fall down without in marriage and outside marriage? And he said, yes.
But he was probably never married. He was a house elder? Well, that's not what this book is telling us, and that's not what Jai Bhataka Swami told me, and that's not what Chandramali told me, and that's not what Krishna Kshetra Prabhu just told me. What I have expressed to you here today, all three of them have expressed the same thing to me. Now, I haven't asked every spiritual master. There is a difference between having, you know, making love with your wife and going out to a prostitute or a strange woman and having sex. There's a difference. And this is what we, you know, this is the difference between the four regulated principles and not the four regulated principles. So one should not equate that. And that's, you know, I mean, there are some people in our movement say some things, some say the others, but you know, this is, I'm reading from the book and presenting what I've heard from others and my personal experience of being married for 28 years. You know, I kind of know it worked for me, so, and I'm still here and able to meet you today. So, yeah.
So, I would like to ask you about the situation, a hypothetical situation. We are in the marriage, and it may happen that wife or husband, they have thoughts about, you know, falling in love, some thoughts about attraction to another woman or another man. how to deal with it? Is it something like breaking the relationship?
I mean, our minds do many crazy things. Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that to control the mind is like to control the wind. You know, recently we had a lot of wind here, so try to stop the wind. Can't do it. The trees are not even stopping the wind. So our minds are, think of so many things. And even at night, sometimes we have crazy dreams. So as long as we don't act on it. Prabhupada said the four regulator principles are physical principles, they're not mental principles. We physically practice this no illicit sex, in our minds, Of course, we try to Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor. We want to focus our mind. Ambarish focuses his mind on Krishna. And that's the whole purpose of chanting, and that's the purpose of associating with each other, to help each other. We're supposed to be helping each other, not judging each other. So when one makes further advancement in Krishna consciousness, his mind will become more trained. And that's what we have to look forward to. I mean, Krishna consciousness is not an overnight process. I've been working on it. I joined in 71, so 38 years. Still working on it. So another thought?
Yeah. I wanted to add that this that we should be sincere with the gurus also, not just not telling the truth. Then the guru gives diksha without knowing that we are breaking principles from before.
Being so, honest with them.
Yeah, to be honest with gurus, because sometimes happens that the sakya will not tell just to get diksha. Then after that he has so many problems. And again, the diksha depends on guru also. Each guru has different.
Yeah, some are stricter than others. I think probably Bhakti Vakai Swami is pretty conservative. So, yeah. Did everyone hear that? We should be honest with, before we take initiation with our guru, that we actually are following the four regulative principles and chanting our rounds. So that was his point. We shouldn't take initiation until we're ready.
But why is so different from guru to guru that some wants
standard
to be...
Difference.
Yes, why? If Prabhupada said different...
That's a good... I mean, I haven't interviewed all the gurus and asked them these sticky questions, so I don't know the realm of stickiness amongst the gurus. But I know what Prabhupada said in his books, and we were reading, we read all these things. So Prabhupada seems, and Prabhupada was liberal with us, and Prabhupada never, he was very upset with divorce. Prabhupada never wanted to hear about divorce, and he never encouraged it. I mean, devotees that were writing him and saying, my husband's bothering me, my wife's bothering me, that was not a big issue. The big issue was divorce. And that's something that Prabhupada doesn't want, and no guru wants his disciples to go through.
How much you bothering?
So basically, we're trying to avoid separation or divorce at all costs. And that's the idea of this graduated scale within marriage to regulate yourself.
If you are having problems with the lust in marriage, should you speak about this to your spiritual masters, even if they are sannyasis, or should you come to someone like you?
Prabhupada,
Well, I can just... after a while, should Prabhupada got tired of hearing of that?
Yeah, Prabhupada said talk to your, he said talk to other householders. Because Prabhupada,
Now, I know Chandramani Maharaj had a disciple that kept on writing to him about this problem. And then he was telling me, he was talking to me, he said, and then after a while, Chandramani Maharaj said, you know, I want you to please stop writing to me about this problem because I'm a sannyasi, and it's not good for me to hear it all the time. Try to find a Grihastha couple to work with.
And particularly if you're a woman, it's best to find an older woman, devotee woman to talk to. That's the best. Like, many ladies have been talking to my wife. You know, I wouldn't expect them to talk to me. Let them talk to her. And then they feel comfortable, you know, expressing their problems. So, yeah, but this way, particularly if you're, well, all the gurus are men, so, you know, they don't want to hear all that, you know, particularly. So. And there's, you know, better to talk to a devotee who's trained, older couple, counselor, like that. So if anyone has any questions about any of the subjects we had over the days, too, of course, we talked about economics, we talked about dharma, artha, kama. We never did get to moksha. The moksha we have every evening with Satchinandan Swami. And evening arti is moksha. Morning Bhagavatam class is moksha. So we have moksha all the rest of the day. That's an easy subject. We all go back to Godhead. Hari Bol. No problems. Funny, you know, if you read the Krishna book and Dwarka, you never hear Krishna, you know, he would have joking with his wife, but he never had fighting with his wife. You can joke with your wife, you know, they make good jokesters. Although my wife never understands my jokes.
I would say, people, that's corny.
I had a better response from my godbrothers. But anyway. Still, your spouse is the person you spend the most time with, that you'll be with for years and years and years. So you better work it out. You don't want to live with an enemy for 20 years. You know, you want to have somebody. Ultimately, your spouse becomes a friend. That takes some time. You know, at some point, they're business partners. You're both, you know, raising children, economics. She's working, you're working, maybe. She's, you know, running the house, you're running the business. So at least on that level, you're business partners to the corporation of the babies, Baby Corp, raising these children. But eventually the children will grow up and move out of the house. So when that happens, you have to go to around the world giving Grihastha seminars. That is the result of many years of happy marriages. You get to tell all the young people how to do it. That's what we're doing now. So, any other thoughts? Yeah.
What will happen in a situation when husband and wife want to have children, but for some biological or other reason they cannot have? Is it agriculture? Does it recommend adoption of children?
I've never read anything about it.
About what?
Adoption. I mean, specifically in the scriptures or Prabhupada said, I've never read anything about it. There are devotees that have adopted children.
In America, there's many devotees.
Many devotees, yeah.
Many devotees have adopted children.
Yeah.
And they've adopted wonderful children. And they've given those children a chance for Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Because it's a natural, you know, desire to have children, and if biologically you can't, you're missing that opportunity. So they adopt, and they see it as an opportunity to bring that person, you know, into Krishna consciousness. Of course, he has his own karma built in with him, and see how it works out. But you know, they give him that opportunity. So it's our last day, and it's going to be your last chance. Otherwise, we have to email each other. Yeah.
I would like to ask a question. How different is the friendship? You mentioned about the friendship between the wife and the husband. Uh-huh. And how different is the friendship between men and men, and that friendship between men
good
and
point.
Women?
Very different.
As Bhaktivinoda
Also, friendship is one of the rasas. We become friends of Krishna too. We have neutrality, servitude, friendship. So these are all natural positions. Friendship with a wife is very different than friendship with a man. And it is recommended by the professionals that men spend a lot of time with their male friends, and women spend time with their female friends. Don't, you know, not that we spend all our time just with our wife or with our husband, but we try to spend our time, you know, with our circle of male friends, our circle of female friends, because women have different subjects that men don't care about. And if you ever take your wife out to a social gathering, and I've had this experience, I cannot get her to leave. Talking.
That's true. I will say that.
They will never stop talking. And it's 11 o'clock. Rama Tulsi, we gotta wake up tomorrow. But men, you know, we have our subjects. Hopefully we're talking about Krishna. Sometimes we're talking about football or something. Or fixing the car or business or home repair. You know, or, you know, something macho. You know,
something. What's important for a great marriage to work is also for the woman to have a woman friends and do activities with a woman. And for the men also to go out and do some activities. They can organize a rafting trip and just go out and be the guys and do guy things.
Guy things. And then guy you things key jai.
But if you're together all the time and just the two of you and completely block out the outside world, you'll find you'll get frustrated with each other very quickly.
Yeah, you have to give each other space. All the time, not only when you're, even when you're, you know, in the early stages of your, at every phase of the marriage, you have to give each other space and let them do their thing and you do your thing, and, you know. Yeah.
Sorry, another question regarding friendship, but now I would like to ask about friendship, mixed friendship. I am in a relationship with my wife, in a marriage, but I have a friend who is a girl, or also a woman, and vice versa. What about that?
I mean, we can have, you know...
For example, that woman also is in a marriage, uh-huh. You know,
yeah.
Something like that.
Personally, myself, I have had very little connection with women other than my wife. One should never do things with other women, meaning socially, unless you're with your wife. If you maybe you can go out as a group together to do something, but
I would advise.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. You put yourself in a dangerous situation. I wouldn't advise you to go out alone to dinner with. Another woman.
Oh,
but maybe you can do it as a couple. And I myself wouldn't go out. I have male friends. We have, you know, years women friends because our friends, we have common friends.
Couple friends.
But I wouldn't go out with another, you know, with a male friend alone out to dinner or to lunch. I would rather do it with him over there. And vice versa, I would never allow him to do that. He knows.
Right. The rolling pin. And one should not be confidential with another female. Namely, you know, sit and talk about your problems or, you know, whatever. Men can talk to men. I always talk to my guy friends about, you know, my life with my wife. Sometimes. You know, and the girls should talk about, you know, amongst themselves, about their lives and, you know, things that bother them. But men and women should not mix that way.
And many times in reality we have seen in ISKCON, which is sad, we have seen best friends break up marriages.
Yeah, some, you know, running off with their best friend.
You take the person as your best friend and the next thing you know, that person is running off with your husband. So wives, please don't be naive. You can be friends, but please also don't be naive.
Prabhupada said something interesting once. He said, man is good, woman is good, together they are bad. That's talking in general, not necessarily marriage. Marriage is a necessity. But men and women, you know, should have their own circles.
Just don't put yourself in those kinds of situations. Rather avoid it.
Because the, you know, the Cupid, the power of lust, is always a strong factor in life, and we should never trust it. Never trust your senses. Don't think, hey, I'm an advanced devotee. I mean, we just had an experience of a very advanced older devotee, scholarly fellow, already divorced once and married again. He was counseling a devotee lady who was having problems in her marriage. And we just found out that he's having an affair with her now. You know, he's the counselor, he's like the guru, but because the nature of the senses are such, so, you know, senses are like uncontrolled horses. You can't trust them. So, these things happen, and we should always try to avoid it. That's why it's better that if a woman wants a counselor or needs counseling, that she goes to a woman counselor, and a man should go to a man counselor, or they should go as a couple to a couple.
Yeah, I have a friend in America. She and her husband do counseling, and she will never meet with a male person alone. Her husband has to be in the room. She will not meet with a male person alone.
I was reading a book on counseling, and it said one of the number one rules is do not cross that line of that relationship of counselor to client. In other words, don't enter into the realm of attachment, emotional attachment for your client. In other words, don't fall in love with your client. So it said, you know, general counseling rule 101 is, you know, keep it professional. Of course, it's, you know, the senses again. So best to avoid those situations.
I always say to my husband, because he goes traveling quite often alone without me because I'm working, and he's always going to South America and doing classes over there. And I always say, Prabhu, I trust you, but I just don't trust the senses. So, better behave, and I better not hear anything.
Rolling pin. Right. I can stand before all of you, as God is my witness, and say that in 28 years of marriage, I have never touched another woman.
And I
so,
have. I have.
She doesn't believe me, but now I now I have said it before everyone. So we got Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, we pretty much covered. And hopefully we've cleared up a lot of sticky ideas so that people you need to feel good about yourself, you need to feel good about your husband, you need to understand you're not pure devotees, and that the guru is forgiving, and Krishna is forgiving, and that we're all in this together, and we're all striving for perfection. And this is the kind of the attitude we like to get across to you all. But we do have that highest standard. We're not propagating low standard. But we're not saying bloop because you can't do the high standard. Or divorce because you can't do the high standard. Yeah.
What about these signs of affection in public?
Oh, yeah, that was one of the sticky subjects I was going to do yesterday, and the Swami walked in on us. Okay, let's touch that. It's a short subject because it's not too long. We did read about how it's natural to have feelings for each other and to, you know, express verbally, you know, you can say to your wife, I love you. Love is not only for Krishna. Krishna is in all of us. So if we love each other as devotees, then, you know, it's all right.
You love your children also.
You love your children. You say you love your children. You can hug. You can kiss your children. Children, there's no restriction. You can hug and cuddle your kitties in public as much as you want. Nobody will criticize you. Even the sannyasis are hugging the children. So.
Because in the old days, there used to be a misconception. Love is only for Krishna. We heard this many times. Yeah. Prabhu, love is only for Krishna. And what you feel for your child, that is not true. Oh, not real love. Yes, we know that we are in this material world. It's temporary. But for now, Krishna has sent these devotees to us. And those are my children. Krishna has given them to me. And trusted them in my care. So it is my duty to love them and make sure they go back to Godhead.
Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, exact quote from Prabhupada is that children are, and children and spouses are natural objects of affection. Natural, not artificial. So don't feel, you know, that I'm in Maya if I'm, you know, play with my kid here at the festival. Now, with your spouse, it's another story. Devotee, you know, if you go to India and you see how Indian society is, that's pretty much how we also are. Namely, in public, you don't see Indian couples holding hands walking down the street. You don't see kissing in public. You see the women dressing conservatively. Even in your daily secular life, when you have a job, you're not wearing your sari and these things. You know, you dress conservatively and you're not trying to attract other men. That is the idea. You have your husband, you're only trying to attract him, no one else. So you dress appropriately for your job and for public activity. But if you are, you go on vacation, and also going on vacation is okay. In the early days, we never went on vacation. We were all doing, you know, sankirtan, preaching. We were living in the temple. We didn't have any money either. So. But as independent householders who live outside, have money, have a job, have their own house, we go on vacation. This, by the way, is our vacation, this trip. We're here with you. But we've been on many vacations where we go to the mountains, go to the beach, you know, just somewhere, and we chant our rounds, we read the books, we maintain proper diet, but, you know, we're just enjoying, we're taking a break from our work. And, you know, when we're younger, we brought all our children. Because the children need a vacation, too. They like going to the ocean and playing in the parks. It's natural. So doing family things together is highly recommended. So, movies are Maya, movies are temporary. We go to the movies sometimes. I mean, I'll be honest. You know, of course, when they put me up for guruship and they play this tape back, they'll probably reject me. Or sannyas. Yeah, now I won't get sannyas for 20 more years because they said that. But anyway. Life is, what is that movie? Life is like a bowl of cherries, right? A box of chocolates. Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Life is like a box of chocolates. And what is the next line after that?
You never know what you're going to get.
You're going to get the cherry one, the nut one, you know, the coconut one. So the idea is to be happy as a devotee and also live a relatively normal life that's regulated. This is the bottom line. Don't be a fanatic. Fanatics don't last. Fanatics never last. And if you're married to a fanatic, they better change, because you're not going to be happy with a fanatic spouse. You've got to come to some kind of happy medium where you can be Krishna conscious and be happy in the world. You know, we're here. Not that we're propagating sense gratification, but we're propagating some kind of regulation of life. And that's what Krishna conscious household life is. The brahmacharis, they never go to movies, we hope. they're never going on vacation. You know, the sannyasis are not doing these things. The householders, we have a license. Prabhupada says we have a license. And we also go out to dinner, vegetarian restaurants sometimes, because the wife doesn't want to cook her whole life. She needs a break. So you take her to a nice restaurant, vegetarian restaurant. In our area, we have a couple of Indian ones and one Chinese.
Fridays, I don't cook on Fridays. Fridays is our date night.
Fridays are date night.
It's our date night.
I mean, I hold my wife's hand sometimes. Of course, I look around, make sure nobody's looking. But sometimes, you know, if nobody's around, if there's no sannyasi around, you know, it's okay.
Well, we don't do it at a devotee function. Like
we don't do it at a devotee function.
Because it's sannyasi.
But, you know, if you're walking on, you know, down here at the beach at night and no prabhus are around, it's not going to kill you. You know. So we read about that. We read about kissing, hugging, and holding hands. You know, these are natural, and these are okay. You know, within the realm of conservative presentation to others. We don't do this in front of others. We don't do this in devotee assemblies.
And for women, this is very important. They thrive on affection. Women, half a said women are 9 times lust here than men. He didn't mean gross lust. He meant women like affection. They like their hands to be held. They like to get flowers. They like to dress nicely. They want beautiful children. They want a beautiful home. That's why women are 9 times less. So women thrive on affection. That's all we want. We want affection. So we don't come home thinking, oh, please, I'm not going to hug my wife. I'm not going to kiss my wife. And I'm just going to treat her like a non-entity.
Right, that
will disturb your marriage.
Yeah, you won't go long with that doing that route. I'm giving you the secrets of a long, happy marriage here, boys and ladies and gentlemen. Boys and girls. There's a few boys here. Mostly ladies and gentlemen. That you have to lighten up. That's the theme of this presentation, to lighten up, be Krishna conscious, but at the same time be yourself. And don't be a fanatic. Don't break the principles. Try to be as strict as you can. And it will naturally, param dustvana vartate, by the higher taste, you will come to that platform of loving Krishna together. And this one point about the 9 times more lusty, you've all heard that, right? You've heard it in class. Usually with a wrong... We were talking to Mother Irmala yesterday about that. We asked for her explanation. And she said, it's not gross physical desire. Men have gross physical desire much more than women. And it was right there, we read it in the purports of the Bhagavad Gita the other day, that men have this problem more than women. Women aren't running around raping people. Men rape people. Men rape women. Women don't, you never hear about in the news a woman raping somebody. It's always the man doing those things. We're not talking about the world, of course. The world. So men have this problem of a much stronger sex drive than a woman. But this 9 times, you know, women got a really bad rap because of this comment. And what it means, it's not gross physical desire, but it's the desire to dress nicely, makeup, you know, bangles. And Prabhupada said that you should give these things to your wife. Prabhupada said you should buy nice saris for your wife. You should give her some jewelry. She should have a decent place to live. And the greatest gift you can give them is a child. So Prabhupada, you know, this is what Prabhupada wanted us, how he wanted us to treat our wives. And this is how, you know, Vedic society, Indian society is today. It's just in ISKCON, because of this brahmachari ashram and these big bees coming out to get married, that we have some misconceptions. Because they're married with the big bee still on there, you know.
What is big
bee? Big bee is brahmachari. Big bee is brahmachari. And A is the adhikari. So we want to have the A, adhikari, householder.
And what about woman? What she should give to the husband so that the marriage will be flourishing?
Ramatulsi, woman. Woman question. pass it over. What the question is, what should I explained what the man should give to the wife. So what should the woman give to the husband?
The husband also wants affection. I know my husband likes an affection. So the woman also has to be affectionate to her husband. She should give her husband a hug, a kiss before she leaves the house. And when he comes back, she should have dinner ready. She should, you know, serve her husband. And just take good care of her husband. I mean, in our household, I don't mind that he doesn't wash the dishes. I don't ask him to do that.
She's not changing the oil on the car, by the way.
I take care of the inside of the house, do all the inside duties. And he takes care of everything outside of the home. And I'm fine with that. I'm happy with that. But I also suggest that as Grihastha couples and families, we should have a strong sadhana at home. Both husband and wife should chant japa together. They should read Prabhupada's books together. And if you have deities, you should have a morning aarti or an evening aarti. Now in our home, we do morning aarti together before I need to go to school. And then while eating breakfast, he'll read to me from Prabhupada's books. And then during dinner also, you know, we'll discuss what we read and what we read Prabhupada's books. And then we chant japa together. It's important that you have a strong sadhana at home. You must have that. If you don't have strong sadhana, if you're not reading together, if you're not worshipping the deities together, your marriage will not last. Your family will fall apart. Because ultimately, we want to love and serve Krishna together. And Krishna is the center of our home. And your guru is there, and Srila Prabhupada to be the center of our home too. It's very important.
Yeah, we expect that all of you understand that as householders, you should all have your own standard of worship of Krishna at home, some kind of deity worship. We see many deities on the altar, so we understand many people have their personal deities they worship. These are all kind of understood, that at home one should be worshiping Krishna in some capacity, and offering their food, and, you know, these standards of devotional service. We're talking more about, you know, our emotional relationships with each other and our physical relationships with each other. And the devotional aspects are, we expect that you already understand those.
Baba said that Grihastha's deity worship is important, actually.
Yeah.
Because he said when Grihastha's dress the deities and take care of the deities, they can meditate on Krishna's face, and especially his eyebrows. And then as you meditate on his eyebrows and his eyes, you slowly get rid of your sex desire, eventually become, because you get so attracted to Krishna. So deity worship for Grihasthas is very important.
You had a question.
In your explanation, why there is much more divorces inside of this country than outside.
Yeah, this was asked the other day. Why are there more divorces in amongst devotees than non-devotees? And actually, I had quoted a statistic yesterday. In Irmala, checked me on that. She said, have you done full research and studied every householder couple in ISKCON? And basically, I'm speaking from my experience in the area of New York and Washington where I've lived, and the people I've known over the last 35 years, that divorce is higher than the world average. At least in North America, USA, it's about 50%. I don't know. This is a national average, not ISKCON average. What's our average in Croatia?
The Catholic. Maybe more.
Amongst the national average. At least 50%. Even at, okay. Reasons why I feel it's higher in ISKCON, because we face the same problems that everybody does with each other, whether you're a devotee or not. You know, men and women have their differences. Plus, we have added on the fact that we have to become pure devotees, and that makes it even harder. And sometimes one of the two, or both, decide not to be Krishna conscious anymore and just give up. So that makes an incompatible situation, as Prabhupada uses the word. And sometimes that causes a divorce. Now, not that I'm recommending that if your wife or husband, you know, stops being Krishna conscious, you divorce him. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it is an added friction to the mix. So, not only do we have to deal with the normal things, but we have to also deal with Krishna consciousness as, you know, an effort with our relationship. So, and that seems to make it, you know, harder. So, any other thoughts? Has this been helpful?
Yes, very much. Thank
a lot of points probably you didn't know about or didn't expect. So we want to thank you for attending. This was our first time in Croatia. We enjoyed it very much. Tomorrow we have Rath Yatra. We're all getting liberated, by the way. Lord Jagannath's mercy. And we hope to come back next year. The Croatian devotees are very receptive, very friendly, and we enjoyed your association very much. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brahmachari ashram meeting instead of Sachinandan's program. So those who want to be brahmacharis, maybe it's a little too late for some of you. It is going on either in the tent or over there. So, in fact, when they told me about it, I asked, would you like me to host it? I said, I was a brahmachari for 9 years. I can give you both sides of the coin. I do speak from experience. I was a brahmachari. I lived in India for a year. So I know what goes on in the brahmachari minds. I had a big B for a long time. A big brahmachari. And it took me years to get out of that. We were talking about that earlier. That after I got married, I was still a big brahmachari with just happened to have a wife. And it took me years to that emotional change that has to take place of being affectionate and being conscious of another human being. You know, you know, brahmacharis are kind of, you know, they only think of, you know, Guru and Krishna, you know, and there's nobody else. You know, but when you're married, you have another person to think about. And that takes, it's a whole paradigm shift. So, and that's really what marriage, the big deal with marriage is to realize you have the responsibility of living with another person that has a whole set of senses and mind and intelligence separate from your own. And women and men's minds, senses, and intelligence are very different than men. So that's the art. I would recommend, there are a lot of books. I mean, they don't, you know, not necessarily Krishna conscious books. Or there are many books on marriage, couple communication. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. The series is very good. And, you know, dealing with men and women is not a Krishna conscious issue. It is an issue that we all face all over the world. And pretty much, if you can figure out how to live happily with each other, Krishna will automatically come. You know, that's 90% of our problem is solved just dealing with each other. And Krishna consciousness is the ambience, the extra of it all. So, last chance for questions. Cigarette. You do have one.
Yes, about the personal space, I really feel that this is something very important.
Personal space, allowing personal space.
Yes, yes. So can you give some example of how this can...
Personal space. The question is personal space, allowing personal space. I have met a number of devotees here who told me that, you know, I love my wife, I will treat her like a princess, but I want her to know that I'm the boss. And I said, Prabhu, that's not a good idea. Then treat her like the princess, but don't expect anything back. Just be nice. So,
I also think personal space is, I can speak for ourselves, is that we trust each other. It's when that trust has to come into marriage, and I don't question him. What are you doing? Where are you going? What is happening today? And I don't like it if he's asking me, where are you going? Who are you going out with? What are you doing? You know, I want him to just trust me that, yes, I say, hey, Prabhu, I'll say I'm going out with my friends today, and I'll be home at a certain time. And then he's not ringing my cell phone every minute. Where are you? What are you up to? You know? So our marriage is based like that. And that's what personal space is. And you give each other time, even in the home. You know, he's not there with you all the time, but that you are working separately in your home, reading, or you're working on your computer. I like that, and I don't like to be bothered. And I know when he's working also too. And he's busy, he doesn't want to be bothered. So that's giving each other your space.
An overly jealous spouse is a big cause of agitation. And I've, you know, she used to be.
I will admit it, I was young.
She wanted to protect her property in our earlier days.
And I had to learn to trust him. And eventually that trust got built up. And he can tell you, he goes around the world. And I'm happy most of the time, 3/4 of the time, I am not with him. Only during the summer, because I have summer break, I can travel with him. But the rest of the time, he's out by himself. I am not there with him. I mean, I trust him.
That's why the men carry a secret weapon. It's called a gold ring.
Well, for many years he didn't wear the gold ring because he was always working in cars. You know, and
now that I'm traveling, she said, put the gold ring back.
Because now that he's traveling and he's not working and he's slowly pulling back from his business, I said, well, since you are not working so much at your business and you're traveling and preaching, please put on your marriage ring. And I took it out and I gave it to him and I said, put it on right now.
For 20 years, I didn't wear this ring because I work with my hands in my job. And sometimes if you do that, you know, it'll get caught and, you know, it's just a little cumbersome. But now I'm wearing my secret weapon.
Because I said, you're going to different temples and there's going to be women around there and I want them to know that you're married. If you're not available.
Off the market. Perpetually.
Yes.
My wife wanted to ask you how you developed that trust to your husband, that you are not any more jealous about him.
It's hard in the beginning. It was
so hard to hear you sit down.
In the beginning, it was very hard because we were young. I was young. I was immature, you know. But I saw that as we stayed married,
I saw that he really was chaste to our marriage vows. I had nothing to fear. You know, he loved the children, he loved me. And it takes time. It gradually takes time. But I will tell you, in the beginning, it is difficult for those of you who are newly married. We had many fights, you know, because of my jealousy. I just felt insecure. I guess it was natural. But as we stayed married, I learned to trust him. It just takes time. Things that he did for me, I saw that he really did love me and that he's not going to go out of the family. And I knew he was true to Srila Prabhupada's teachings. I know that I can depend on him and that he will not deviate from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. So, that's why.
Well, that was a nice... Thank you. And in my request to the GBC when I sign up for, you know, something else. So it gradually grows, you know, faith in your husband gradually grows, faith in your wife gradually grows. You have to learn to trust each other. That's part of the deal. And that's, you know, part of happy marriage. So. Any other thoughts?
We don't live in a temple. Yes. We have achievement, and I would like to ask what's the most important? How can we make our children to stay devoted? Mm. And that is a big danger for our society.
Sure. Well, we had a whole... Yesterday we talked all about children, raising children. And I said I've known a lot of couples who sent their kids to Gurukul the whole time. Mother Irmala has three children. They all went... She ran the Gurukula. She was the teacher. Her, you know, two of her children are, you know, good devotees, initiated. The last son, you know, is... Not so much. Congregational member. You know. A little loose. And many people, they've done homeschooling with their children all the way up to their 16 or 18. And then the child ends up marrying a karmi. You know, I've seen this in our own community in Washington, D.C. So there's no guarantee. And many kids went to the Vrindavan Gurukul and Mount Mayapur, and different schools. And still, you know, were not much Krishna conscious when they got old enough. We try our best. Main thing is not to be, you know, fanatic with your children. Show them you love them. Show them the happiness of what Krishna consciousness is, that it's not just a restriction. Because that's all they see, restriction, restriction, restriction. They have to understand that there's, you know, happiness, there's love in Krishna consciousness also. And it's something they have to choose themselves when they're of that age. Just like we joined Krishna consciousness, we knew what is Maya, we rejected Maya, we took Krishna. They also have to make that same choice. And sometimes they have to experiment. And a lot of them do. They do many crazy things that drive us crazy. But, you know, if we're just, you know, if we're always there for them and they know we care about them, we're not, you know, rejecting them, then gradually they'll come back to us, we hope. You know, that's our prayer. We can pray to Krishna, and that's, you know, it's all in Krishna's hands. But, of course, when they're young, we give them all the, you know, the basis. You know, we give them Krishna conscious education and knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and the philosophy as best we can. But I know so many students that memorize the whole Bhagavad Gita and all these things, and still they do, you know, crazy things. So Maya is a strong force. So they have to see what a nice community we have, that we're happy with each other. I say that to groups all the time. I say, how are we going to get people to join our community when we ourselves in our community are always fighting with each other? You know, it's like, how is somebody going to come in, a new person, new family or couple, and see, oh, well, these people aren't happy either, you know. I thought they had an answer, but, you know, I don't see harmony here. So that's how, you know, we have to be happy with each, with ourselves, with our spouses, with each other. And then we can, you know, be more attractive to other people. Because everyone's looking for that better place, that happy place, the nice people. That's why devotees, when they smile, people say, I came to the temple because, you know, I remember one devotee, I was on Sankirtan, and she said, I came to the temple because I met you on Sankirtan and you were smiling. And, you know, I never see anyone smile, hardly, unless they're drunk or, you know, intoxicated in some way. You know, then people are happy. They say that alcohol is the social, what do they say? Yeah, it's a social, I forget what they call it. Anyway, it takes the edge off you so that you can be artificially happy. But devotees are naturally happy, and we should try to manifest that. Because if we're all sitting around morose and uptight and artificially, you know, restricting ourselves and, you know, just... and we're fighting with each other. I've been all over the world. Bali. You've heard of Bali in the Indonesian islands? Beautiful place. It's a paradise. It's like heaven. The weather is perfect. It's not never cold. You know, rainforest, fruits and everything grow naturally. Many, many devotees there. But when I go there, what did I see? Different groups fighting, devotees fighting, you know, guru groups, my guru, your guru. And, you know, we find the silliest things to fight over. You know, if we weren't devotees, we'd be fighting over something else. And then we become devotees, it's our nature to fight. Because it's Kali Yuga, quarrel and hypocrisy, we quarrel. So, and then we also quarrel as husband and wife. My wife and I finally said, years ago, we said, you know, let's stop fighting. It's like not getting us anywhere. And so we both know where the door is. If it's that bad, we can walk out. Neither of us ever did. But we just said, well, you know, this is stupid, you know. It's like, we just beat each other up, you know, emotionally, never physically. I never hit my wife. She has a rolling pin. But we would have many arguments in the early days over silliest things. I would always say, what are we fighting about? You know, what is this? You know, it's like, you know, it means nothing. But, and I'm sure you've all had experience of this, right? Anyone who's married has had a fight over the dumbest things. You know, never anything big and important. You know, I always said to my wife, look, I'm not having an affair, I make money, you know, I love the kid, what do you want from me? You want Superman here.
What do you mean flowers, Prabhu?
Bring me flowers, now she tells me. 28 years later, she should have told me. So, anyway, we should all try to learn from each other, don't judge each other. Be merciful to each other. Karunika, devotee is merciful. So be merciful to your wife, to your husband, to your children, to each other. We should, all these things we read about, we should practice. If we do actually do these things, we'd have a beautiful society. And we'd have happy people. So we just have to practice it. We have it all written down. The karmis don't have any of this information. We just have to implement it, practice it. So, yeah.
Regarding economics.
Nobody wants to go to the brahmachari class, I see. All right. As long as you're interested, I'll keep going.
Regarding economic development, I was wondering, what income should the caste give? 50% of their income, or 50% of what is left after the basic necessities of life are like paid? So
yeah, this is a good question. It's said that, I'll repeat it, it's a recommendation that devotees give 50% of their income to support Krishna consciousness preaching. Now, you know, how do we interpret this, is the point. Because Rupa Goswami gave 50%. Of course, and somebody mentioned, if we study Rupa Goswami, this is after he had retired from his family, and he had a big chunk of money, so he gave 50% for that. He kept 25% for emergency, and he gave 25% to his family members. I mean, most of you don't make a lot of money here in this country. I mean, most of you barely make enough to live comfortably. So, you know, if all of a sudden the order came from God to give 50%, you'd have a real struggle. So we interpret that as also not only giving money, but giving our time. Our time is worth money. We all work for hourly wages. We all earn money by our time. So if we volunteer our time at the temple doing some service, this is as the same as giving money. Say I'm a carpenter, I go to the temple and I'll fix something. Say I'm an auto mechanic and I'll fix the temple car. You know, we'll go on, of course we go out and preach on Sankirtan, we sell books for the temple. And we also give for festivals, we give money as much as we can. So this 50% concept, you know, is this before taxes, after taxes, you know, before expenses, after expenses. If it's after expenses, it's no problem because you've got about $2 left in your pocket. €1, and that's all that's left after you've paid everything. So the idea is to give what you can. When you become wealthy and famous, you can, you know, build a temple. When you're Ambarish, you know, Alfred Ford, you can build the Mayapur temple. But in the meantime, you support your local temples and you give your time as much as you can. Because that's what we feel good about our time, and that's what we feel the happiest in giving. So that's how I've always seen it. Yeah.
Ja sam 11 godina, imam troje djece i jako sam vezana za mog muža i djece. Činim se da sam sve više i više vezana, zapravo trebalo bi vremenom postati odvezana. Sad mi želim da mi on iskustva kaže da li to ta vezanost u istinu prođe.
I have been married for 11 years and three children. And in my experience, my attachment to my family keeps growing. So I would like to hear your experience that this attachment.
Well, women don't take sannyas, first of all. Never said in the Varnashram system, women aren't supposed to be, you know, on the sannyas roster. And the vanaprast, it's the man who goes out. Actually, in vanaprast, the husband and wife go together. And they go to, you know, holy places, or they go to the Croatian camp festival. You know, we're like, this is like a vanaprasa thing for us here. Women, attachment is natural, and so you have your three kids, then they're going to get married and have their kids, and then you're going to be attached all over again. So it'll never end.
But it's okay because you are attached to Krishna's devotees. This attachment is natural for women. Because it's unnatural for women to be
detached
from the devotees. That's a very unnatural thing. But it's natural to be attached. And for devotees, it's even better because we attach to Krishna's devotees. These children have been sent by Krishna. This is their chance for them to take birth in a devotee family and make this their last birth. And so we should be attached to them and help them make this their last birth.
Grandmothers play a very important part in Vedic society. In Indian society today, it's the grandmother that's always telling the stories of Krishna to the kids. We've seen in India. You know, generally the husband and wife are busy, you know, in making money. Grandmother's retired. She's you know, the householder swami, sort of. You know, she has nothing to do but talk to the kids about, you know, Krishna consciousness. So that's your job. So don't think you're supposed to take sannyas. You're not supposed to.
To be attacked.
Right. That's our problem. We're too artificially detached. Even when we're, you know, when even when we're young, we're artificially, we're thinking this is Krishna consciousness, detachment, you know, but householders, they're supposed to be attached so that they can raise nice families. Leave the detachment to the brahmacharis and the sannyasis. They're good at that. You know, that's not our job. That's not our ashram. Our ashram is responsibility. You know, make money for Krishna, support the family, preach Krishna consciousness, have happy children. So, that's our job. Yeah. Mixed?
Mixed marriages.
Oh, meaning Krishna and non-Krishna?
No, meaning like India.
Oh, racial mixing.
Yeah.
I've heard that, yeah.
What?
Because men can marry Indian women, but not people.
I think you can only speak for yourself.